Hello, I'm Jamie Carruthers, aka Colonel Carruthers. During this project, I will be talking to a bunch of people about autism and people with special needs. Being autistic myself, who knows a community of people with special needs, I will be discussing and understanding autism through the eyes of other people as well as my own. Throughout this project, I will be talking to two people who work and live with people with special needs and autism and talk about their views and experiences. First, I will be talking to Ian Mack on the mid-morning show about me and my own experiences with autism.
Hello, Jamie's in, and Colonel.
Colonel, yeah.
Colonel Carruthers is in, and I just wanted to bring you in because you're working on a project at the moment.
I am, yeah. I thought this would be good for me because I'm autistic myself, and I know quite a lot of people on the island who are autistic, and a lot of places on the island that help support people with learning difficulties, physical disabilities, autism, things like that. I plan to interview some of them as much as I can, of course.
Is it? We've had a number of people in that have been on the show, and some slightly younger, some slightly older, that have had living with autism, dealing with autism, and it is quite an interesting subject, and I think it's one that we probably 20 years ago didn't talk about, but now we are, and I think that's we've come on leaps and bounds. But I would imagine there's still a bit of, hang on a minute, I don't really know too much about it. So what are the main problems that you have on a day-to-day basis?
Well, as you said, 20 years ago, not many people knew about autism back about then, and probably 50 years ago, about one in every 1,000 people were autistic. You just didn't know it. And nowadays, it's more like 1 in 100, so it's getting very much more common nowadays. So a lot of people are finding out about it, learning a bit more about it, and that's a good thing. But yeah, a lot of people still say, okay, but what exactly is it? Well, a lot of people say, oh, it's a mental illness. I disagree with that. An illness can be cured. Autism can't be cured. It's something that you're born with. And it can make you quite socially inadequate in some cases. For example, years ago, I wouldn't be able to go out on my own on the bus and talk to people, make friends, and it's only with a lot of support I've managed to become much more confident. I did performing arts, which really boosted my confidence. I'm glad I did that. But yeah, there's a lot of forms of autism. I mean, if you don't know all forms, that's fine. I know quite a few myself. I probably don't even know all of them.
But okay, I'm guessing you're finding out.
I am still finding out about Sam, yeah.
Okay, you're 23 now, so is every day like a learning curve to you, or do you know roughly where you are with it?
I do, yeah. I mean, I've got mild autism, so it doesn't affect me as much as most other people would. There's some people like me who have very mild autism and it doesn't really show. There's some people who have quite a bit of autism, and when you see them, you think something might be a bit wrong with them. And there's people like my brother who is severely autistic. He can barely have a normal conversation. He repeats things that he's heard. He understands no and yes, and whenever he wants something, we have to teach him to say, "I want something, something, please." So, I love my brother. He's great. I still have a lot of fun with him. So I'm not saying just because he's autistic I can't have that. But yes, someone like my brother, it's extremely difficult to have that kind of relationship. I mean, I've had a great relationship with him for all my life, pretty much. He's a couple of years younger than me. But yeah, his behaviour did get a little bit bad at points. It's got much better now with a lot of support. I know what you mean. A lot of people are still finding out different types of autism, and some people are finding out what autism is. I mean, I'll tell you a story. What happened with my brother one time on the ferry. He ran past and pushed aside an old woman, and we came over and said we're very sorry. But then she had a huge go at us, and we said, look, we can't control him. He's autistic. And she says, oh, I'm not feeling very well myself. So it's shocking that, you know, even back there, when autism was, you know, getting more and more known, there were still people who just don't know what it is.
It's kind of sad, really, when you think, and what it comes down to is awareness. And I'm a great believer in the more you make people aware of things, and we've all got different quirkiness about us, and the more we make each other aware of things, the more maybe acceptable we will be of each other. I mean, that's the way I look at it, and it's really simple. But I would imagine you've got an uphill task, haven't you?
A bit. I mean, I think on the island there's a lot of them. There's quite a lot of autistic, dyslexic people on the island. Probably more than you know. I mean, but the good thing is there's Carisbrook High School. When I went there, I went to the Autistic Spectrum Resource Centre. Everyone that had learning difficulties, special needs, and quite a few of them I've kept friends with ever since. I see them on weekends and stuff. And there's a lot of groups. There's Way Forward, there's John's Club, and No Barriers helps out with people with learning difficulties as well. You know, there's quite a lot of that on the island. Not a lot of people know about it. I mean, some people do. I mean, I've got friends who have children who have autistic, and you know, and it's great that, you know, on the island there's this big community that helps people like that.
And it's only come about in the last little while because we're actually talking about it and we're a bit more open about it and so on. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you a story now. I'm obviously twice your age, but when I was at school, nobody had autism, nobody had dyslexia, nobody had, you know, and it's almost now, when you think back and you think, you know, of certain kids that I used to knock around with 30 plus years ago that were a little bit quirky, you think, oh, they may have been. They may have had autism, they may have, you know, and
they might
and
have
think,
done, yeah.
So it's quite, we're moving in the right direction is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we are.
Which is great, but we're not moving quick enough because, you know, people should be a little bit more aware. And by us, by talking about this now, it makes it more aware. By you doing your documentary, it makes it a little bit, a bit more high profile. You've got your brother, who hopefully you're going to be able to interview, and others too.
I won't be able to interview him at all, really.
Not one word.
I will be able to, maybe to get words out of him and sounds out of him, but, you know, I wouldn't have a normal conversation. You know, I couldn't say, what's it like being autistic? You know, he wouldn't understand that at all.
No. Do you know what? I mean, you come across, I've always had this in my head, that people that are autistic, they don't get jokes. That's what I was told by somebody
that
was.
There are some people, yes. I was like that years ago. You know, I used to hear a joke and I used to take it quite literally. I mean, some people do that. I've got a friend who has ADHD, he can sometimes take things a little bit literally, and he's a great guy. He's one of my best friends, but yeah, sometimes when he gets in stressful situations, or you know, when jokes go a little bit too far, he takes it a bit too seriously, and you know, that's something you have to be aware of. Autistic people, I mean, I can take autistic jokes. You know, I've picked up a bit of bullying in middle school quite a bit, not because of my autism, well, partly of it, but for other reasons, of course. I've learned to cope with that, you know, and you know, there's a lot of you know, autistic jokes out there, but you know, one thing I do know is, you know, jokes are jokes, shouldn't be taken seriously. Sometimes with autistic people, they can be taken seriously.
Sure.
And you know, not just with autistic people, you know, people, you know, self-harm, you know, if you make a joke about them, they'll just enforce that pain and make them do it more. I've got a friend who's autistic who had experience with that. He's okay now, which is great, but yeah, a lot of autistic people can feel normal pain that normal people feel as well, which a lot of people don't think about.
Do you know what's really nice? In the space of 3 or 4 weeks, you came in, first interview that you gave. I mean, it was a good interview, but you were, how can I put it, a little bit sort of hyper, a little bit getting your words out, I've got to get my words out as quick as possible.
I'm like that, yeah.
You're much more relaxed now.
Yeah, well,
it's coming across.
Yeah, well, back then, you know, it was the first time for me being on VAD. Sure, I was thinking, what am I doing? But, you know, being on it for the past few weeks now, I've become much more natural with it. Like I said, really, I'm just having a conversation with you now,
that's
and
exactly
everyone's
it.
Listening. And, you know, that's a really great way to communicate, really.
That's exactly it. And long may it continue. And I can't wait to hear this documentary. I really can't. I think it'd be fascinating.
Thank you very much.
It'd be a great, you know, great thing for you to do, to highlight, you know, issues for people that, you know, are kind of... Do you look upon it as suffering? Because I look at it and think, is it suffering? Do you suffer? Do you have pain? Does it hurt? Does it, you know, are you frustrated?
Well, it can be. I mean, granted, you know, I remember I heard someone do a speech and he had autism, and I asked him, would you feel better being like everyone else without autism? And he said, in some cases, yeah, I would, because you know, it's kind of like those things, like, you know, I want to be normal, I want to fit in. I mean, I kind of feel that sometimes. You know, I've had bad episodes in the past where I was completely stressed out of my mind because of it. But I'm not now. I've learned to accept it. I'm quite happy with it. And one of the best things about having autism, in my opinion, for me, I'm slower in some cases, but stronger in others. For example, I'm quite smart, picking up things easily. I'm good with computers. I can, you know, and like card games, video games, stuff like that, I pick them up quite quickly. So yeah. I'm slow in most areas, especially with my dyslexia. I'm mainly slow in English, but I was better at maths. So, you know, it can be a good thing or a bad thing either way. You just have to learn to understand it, I think.
Well, do you know what I think? I read a book earlier this year, and it was quite an amazing book. It was by Martinez, somebody, Francesca Martinez, who suffers from cerebral palsy.
I think I've heard of that.
And the book is called What is Normal Anyway? It's, I've changed the words because obviously I can't give you the whole title.
No,
on
that's
air
okay.
Because it's bad language.
No,
But it was just a brilliant, brilliant book. And I think to myself, I'd like to say that, you know, you come across as this normal guy, but what is normal? Everyone's got quirkiness in them.
Yeah, everyone has. Yeah, I agree with you. Everyone has something about them that makes them who they are. You know, if everyone was the same, life would be, you know, boring, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
But, you know, I agree. Everyone has their own quirkiness. Everyone has their own things they like and dislike. Everyone has their own personalities. You know, autism is kind of almost become kind of one of those things, which can sometimes be a problem, sometimes not.
Good. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Thank you very much
for spending a bit of time with us.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com. This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Vitapack, everything your business needs. Office supplies, cleaning supplies, packaging, office furniture, catering supplies, first aid, printed carrier bags, tea and coffee machines, saving you time and money. Vitapack. Check them out now, www.vitapack.co.uk, or give them a call, 01983 721 100. Fast, free, next day delivery, island wide. Vitapack.
Want to beat the NHS waiting times and be seen by an experienced physiotherapist? If you have an injury, ongoing pain, or just want some advice, contact Physiocare and Sports Injury Clinic today. We are the largest and oldest physiotherapy practice on the island, with three practices in Ryde, Bembridge and Cowes, and our aim is to see people within 48 hours. We're registered providers for all the major UK insurance companies. Let our enthusiastic team help you. Contact our friendly and knowledgeable practice manager, Rachel, on 01983 812 576 or by email manager@physio-care.com or on our website physio-care.com.
Stay social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Now we are talking to my own mother, Melanie Crawford Trotman. Hi, Mum.
Hello, Jamie.
Thank you very much for doing this.
That's fine.
Now, obviously, I've got a few questions for you. If you really don't want to answer any, that's fine.
No, that's fine.
But, you know, and we'll have a talk about it, because we all know about autism quite a bit. Obviously, you know, yeah. I've got autism, you know, very well about that. My very first question to you, as I'm a mother who's got three children, one being severely autistic, what is it like living with children with autism?
Well, I suppose there's no one answer to that, because every autistic person is different, so every autistic child will be different. And every autistic child will display their autistic symptoms differently. So some children will have autism very mildly and just find a little bit of difficulty with communication or being sociable with their friends or making friends. And other children will be very severely affected and not be able to talk. And so the only way that they can express themselves is perhaps by screaming or crying or hurting themselves or hurting other people, banging their heads, you know, because they can't say how they feel.
Yeah, Charlie's like that, isn't he? Well, he used to be like that.
He used to get very upset. We couldn't take him out. We couldn't take him to the shops because he would run into the shops and take sweets. Or if he didn't want to go where we were going, he would perhaps throw himself down, scream and cry, and people wouldn't really understand why.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so it was very hard. We were pretty trapped and couldn't really do very many of the things that we would have liked to have done, because everything we did, we had to think about, you know, would Charlie get upset? How would Charlie cope with the journey? How would Charlie cope with walking along the street? How would Charlie cope with going into a shop? You know, would he run into the sea? Would he run away from us? So it was always very worrying.
He did that once. He actually did run away, didn't he, one time?
He did. He's very clever.
He is. I was going to talk to you about that. I mean, you know, he's fairly autistic. You know, he can barely have a normal conversation with him, you know. In order to actually speak to us, he has to repeat words that,
that's,
you know,
right.
He has.
He understands,
but, you know,
it, but he doesn't,
but, you know,
say,
like I said, you know, when you first meet him, you're thinking, you know, now, how can someone like this, you know, cope? But, you know, he's incredibly smart, isn't he?
He is. And when he escaped from Ryde House, he waited until the carer had left the room to get his pudding. And he went and he put his... he had already put his swimming trunks under his trousers, and he learnt how to open the childproof windows. And when the carer disappeared, he went out of the window, got out of the window, ran down to the sea, and pulled off his trousers and then ran into the sea with his swimming trunks on, and seven carers had to run in.
We had to get the Coast Guard, didn't you?
We did. They had to get the lifeboat out, and they had seven carers in the water for a very long time. So it was very frightening, but Charlie thought it was great fun because he was being chased.
Of course, yeah. So he does love
fun.
Those things, yeah.
He does. But yeah, like and talking about escaping, he did escape when he was about three from our house in London because you let him out one morning. I don't know if you remember that.
I was very young. I was like five.
You were very young. And we came down in the morning to find the door open and Charlie gone. And that was very, very frightening. And I said to you, Jamie, you know, where's Charlie? And you said, well, I let him out. And I said, why? And you said, well, because he wanted to go.
Yeah, well, I was like that.
Yeah. And the police found him and we rang the police and luckily they had him safely in time.
Yeah, what age was Charlie diagnosed with autism? I was diagnosed when I was about seven.
Seven or eight. It was a bit different, Jamie, because you were both different.
We're
you
very know, different, yeah.
You were always very clever. You could do puzzles and, you know, you were obviously very bright, but you just didn't say very much to us and we couldn't really work out why that was, and we thought, well, perhaps it's just because he's a boy and boys don't like to say very much. And I took you to a speech therapist who said, oh, he's got some learning difficulties. And I thought, no, my Jamie hasn't got learning difficulties. He's much too clever. And they said you had some speech and language problems and that you'd need a bit of help at school, which you had from a brilliant school. So you did learn to speak slowly and surely.
I spoke. I couldn't speak until I was about four. And
about four or five.
And even then I was only saying words.
Yeah, you didn't say very much at school, but you were very good and you enjoyed being around other children, which a lot of people with autism don't. A lot of children with autism don't like being with other people, but you always liked being
with other
people.
Even some adults don't.
Yeah, you were always friendly. You always liked running around and playing with the other children. But you also liked playing on your own and being absorbed in puzzles and building and things like that.
That was my creative side, I think.
Yes, a sort of very spatial kind of intelligence.
Yeah, there was a possibility. Yeah. I think I was spatial a lot. But spatial, of course, those listening who don't know, it's basically kind of like a way of saying you're very smart in very particular areas. Puzzles can be solved very, very easily by these type of people. Mm. I, you know, was theories that, you know, I was like that. I probably still am, but, you know, that's different.
Yes, you're good at putting things together. If I get stuck with instructions, you help me, don't you? Because I'm not very good on that side of things. Yeah. So you help me put things together from IKEA,
yeah,
things like that.
There you go, then.
Yeah. So we all have our different skills and talents, that's the thing. And autistic people, you know, some do have these special skills that they talk about, but most people with autism just sort of jog along at whatever level they can. But generally speaking, they're very good at things like computers and maths and sciences and the logical things. You were good at those things, but you also did, you know, you did go to a normal mainstream school, and when you were
eventually
young, and you got help, and you had what they called a statement of special needs, which meant that you had special help in the classroom, and you had help reading and writing and speaking, help from a speech therapist, things like that. Whereas Charlie, you know, did have much greater needs than you had, and so he had to go to a special school. He also had a statement of special needs, but he was in a special class for people with severe autism. And unfortunately, even though he was there at a special school, we did need to send him away to the mainland to a special school.
That was a tough time.
Which was a terrible, terrible time because he was very unhappy. It didn't work.
It just made him worse,
didn't it? He didn't understand. He started to hurt himself and he damaged himself a lot. Mm. And in the end, when he was about 17, social services said, no, he must come back to the island where he would feel safer. And we were pleased about that.
And he's happy now, isn't he?
He's very happy.
He's just come back from Disneyland, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
He's had a wonderful time, apparently.
Yes, 4 or 5 years ago, he used to need 5 carers with him all the time. Now one or two, and he's just been to Disneyland, and as you say, had a fantastic time in Disney World. So now he can do that. He can go out and enjoy things. He can go to the shops. He can go to pantomimes, bowling, skating, walking, go to restaurants. Yes,
and
he's still got
5 years ago, we probably couldn't do any of that. No. And it's incredible how he developed.
Amazing, amazing. And it's because Ridehouse worked so hard with him.
Exactly.
And the carers are so brilliant that he can do all those things. So he now has a really nice quality of life, has a good time, and probably has a better life than a lot of people because he doesn't worry in the same, most of us,
he doesn't worry about the future. It's almost like he can't understand that concept of worrying.
He just lives for the present, and as long as he's doing what he wants to do, and he's warm, and he's comfy, and he's had nice food, then he's a happy lad. Just to go back to the original question about what's it like to
living with children with autism.
An autistic child just is different to everybody. So you'd have to talk to everyone who had an autistic child and their answer would be different.
I agree with that. Because everybody,
everybody with autism is different. I think one of the worst things, actually, was battling with the local authority, the local education authority, to get the help that you needed. To get the right kind of help, to convince people that you did need help, even though it was obvious. And
is it for me?
For you and for Charlie. For you and Charlie. Because although it was obvious that Charlie needed help, we wanted to do a special programme with him when he was younger called the LOVAS programme, or something that's called Applied Behavioural Analysis, which is a very structured way of teaching someone with autism one-to-one or two-to-one, and just going through learning rote by rote, bit by bit, using, you know, little things as rewards when they do it right, so that they learn that that's the right answer or the right way to behave. So, for example, when Charlie was learning to count, when he mastered something or achieved something, he would be given a tiny little piece of sweet, and then that would encourage him to try and do it right the next time.
It's like training a dog.
It is. It's what they call the Pavlovian response, which Pavlov did with the dogs. You know, he fed them when they responded to to the right thing, and it's a bit like that. It's the same principle, but it does teach people. You can teach people how to behave. And your sister Lily, of course, went on to do her master's degree in applied behavioural analysis, so she is now working with autistic children in that special way.
We're surrounded by it, aren't we now?
We are surrounded by it, but she learnt a lot by seeing Charlie when she was young and when he was young, and so she's been able to turn that to advantage and use that in her career, and that's something that she's very good at, and you know, will benefit people.
Yeah, and so it's interesting about that, because I'm probably like 20, 25 years ago, probably people didn't hear about autism or something like that.
That's right.
You know,
well,
a lot of people saying years ago, you know, oh, we didn't hear about this, we didn't hear about that, you know, we didn't hear about autism, you know, like 50 years ago, autism didn't exist.
It didn't exist. I think people were just, it was just all people had learning difficulties. I trained as an occupational therapist in the 1970s, and we had a lecture about autism. And I thought, gosh, that sounds so interesting. I'd really like to work with autistic children. But we
I did.
But we were told when we were taught about it that it was a very, very rare condition, and we would not really see it in our career. And then, of course, now it turns out that something like 1 in 56
children is
on some stage of some level of the autistic spectrum.
Yeah.
So it's a huge spectrum, going from people who are very able, and they call them mini professors, or they might be very clever and just have a little bit of difficulty interacting with other people, to people who have some problems with speech, or people who have problems making friends with people, or people, you know, like our youngest son Charlie, who has great difficulties with everything, all of the sort of triad of impairments, they call it, which is imagination, communication,
interaction. What would you say to a community of people or parents who either have to work or have to live with someone with autistic people, you know, or to people who don't really understand about what autism is, you know, what would you say to them to... Yeah.
Ah, that's a very difficult question, Jamie.
Well, that's
Do you mean somebody who has just had a child diagnosed with autism, or somebody working with them?
Or working, yeah.
Well, I'd say never give up. You or your child should never give up, because so much can be achieved. And for example, if you don't mind me using you as an example, you know, when you were little and you couldn't talk, then obviously I used to be very worried about you. But you're so clever, and you do so much. You act, you perform, you won Student of the Year at the college. I'm just showing off.
Back now. In 2012, yeah, I know.
I'm showing off. You play the guitar, you play the piano, you're doing this four-piece course on the radio. You've moved out to your own flat, you're independent, you can cook. Don't know if you've learned to clean very well yet, Jamie.
Well, I'm getting there.
You'll get there.
I think like you said, 5 years ago, you probably think I wouldn't be able to do this.
No, and you've done everything really. Mm. You've got a job.
Exactly. Yeah,
got a paid job as well. So really, you've done amazingly well. Mm. And Charlie, you know, even though he started life with such huge difficulties, and he always will have big difficulties. He has things to do, and he's improved and still improving.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, I mean, that is the ultimate message, isn't it? You know, it may be a hard raising someone or working with people with autism, because it's a really hard thing to do.
But the most difficult thing, I would say, in the world.
It is one of the most difficult things. Having a child like Charlie is
very, very, very hard. Difficult. And it does get worse in the teenage years.
It does,
I would say to everybody is that it does get better. However bad it is.
Never give up. That is a great...
And it does get better once people hit the age of 18 or 19. Things settle down, the hormones settle down, and things generally calm down. I mean, if you imagine any teenager, any normal teenager might go through what they call a neurotypical teenager, might go through a very bad time in their teens, being rebellious against their mums and dads, misbehaving.
Smoking, drinking, breaking the law.
Being bad. But then generally people tend to settle down once they get out of their teens and they settle down, they become adults.
Same with autism.
For people with autism. They settle down
and
learn to cope with the world.
Thank you. And our last question, this is going to really reflect on, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of people have seen autism as kind of a problem, and in some cases, not all cases, you know, some people with autism can't do this, but they're better on other things. Here's a question for you, and like I said, answer as honestly as you can. If you don't want to answer, understand. It's with Charlie, if you could take the autism away from him right now, would you?
Yes, I would. Of course I would, because although he's happy, and I love him to pieces, and I love you to pieces, I love my daughter to pieces, if he could make his own way in the world and be independent and do all the things that other children do, young adults do, then of course I would be happy. You know, I'd love to see him doing what you're doing, living on his own and going out with friends and enjoying himself like that and having independence. But you can't change what is.
You can't.
You can just make the best of it. And improve on it and hope and enjoy what there is. You know, an autistic child is still your child and you still love them and they still bring you huge joy.
Mm.
And I think that's really all I can say, that you just take the joy and you work with that, and you can't make people be different. So yes, I would... Of course, I'd love it if Charlie could have a normal life, but that's not going to happen. So,
and the thing is, it wouldn't be Charlie then, you know, if you did that.
Wouldn't be Charlie, although he still is Charlie. He's still got lots of personality, lots of sense of humour.
He'll always have that, yeah.
He's always been like that. And as long as he's happy, and as long as you're happy, and as long as Lily's happy, then I don't mind.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, for me, you know, I love Charlie to bits as well. He's very affectionate, isn't he?
He is, yeah. They say that autistic people aren't affectionate, but...
That's a lie.
Well, sometimes autistic people find it difficult to show emotion or be touched. But luckily, with all you three children, you've always loved being cuddled and touched and kissed and being affectionate. And that's very important. So... Yes, I can't imagine what it would be like to have a child who didn't want to be cuddled.
No,
because Charlie still cuddles me like a baby.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. The thing is, with me, like I said, with me and Charlie, you know, I still love him to bits. I'm going to be seeing him every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if I ask myself that question, I'd say if I could take all that autism away from my brother, for me, he wouldn't really be my brother anymore. He'd be a completely different person.
He would, but you'd have grown up with him.
I'd be happy for him. I'd be happy that he has a normal life. But then, you know, that relationship I had with my brother would be gone because it's gone.
And you always had a very special relationship, you and Charlie, didn't you? You always had your own language and way of playing together.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, you know, I don't think, you know, we should deal with autism properly, you know, like, cure it. But there isn't a cure, you know. Mm. We deal with it, we fight with it, and, you know, it's, you know, it's one of the most horrible things that, you know, you can go through, especially if you're raising them. But, like you say, if you keep going, you never give up, things will get better.
That's right. Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yes.
Well, I think that's a very positive note to end on, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for this, ma'am.
No, it's great to be able to say those things.
Thank you very much.
I hope it's been interesting.
When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but not what you need, when you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in rivers, and the tears come streaming down your face, when you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone could it be worse? Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I
Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone. 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Andy Gustar is here to tell us about Bring a Friend at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
Bring a Friend is a scheme we're running for our existing customers to take away a voucher and to bring a friend in with that voucher next time so that you each receive a pack of our famous ham, our traditional ham and local ham. We're going to keep this going hopefully for around about 2.5 to 3 months. When you turn up, initially you'll be given a voucher, and on that voucher you'll find there's a small form to fill out as regards to your details, your name, your telephone number or your email address. We want to build a database that we can keep you in contact with our ongoing offers. We do some spectacular offers of a very good quality meat.
Hamilton's are in Newport, they're in Pyle Street. Where else are you?
We're in Cowes High Street, Wootton Bridge. We also have a shop now on Dodner Industrial Estate.
Hamilton's Fine Foods, the best local butcher in town.
Island-wide and across the world, this is Vectis Radio, broadcasting from the Riverside Centre in Newport.
Okay, and now I'm here with John Phillips of the John's Club. Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for doing this.
That's fine. That's...
The very first question, as I know, you do John's Club, don't you?
Yes.
How long have you been doing that now?
It's 25 years this year.
25 years, look at that. Yeah. What got you into doing the John's Club?
Well, actually, because I can't read or write myself, I've had difficulties in the past with mixing and being involved with other people. But I actually worked in a residential home, and at that time they didn't go out much, they didn't do much, and I took them to a Christmas party and seen how much they enjoyed it and decided to set something up, and that was it, really.
Mm. Did you work there before doing this?
Yes, I worked at the residential home.
No, how long did you work there?
Oh, sorry, about a year I'd been working there. Yeah, and it was just, like I say, by chance that I actually went to work there, because I always worked in factories, labouring.
Oh, look at that. So, you said you have problems yourself, you can't read or write, can you?
I can't read and write, and I have problems with memory and holding information.
I see, and you know, even then, you know, you're doing something like this, helping a lot of other people with needs, aren't you?
Yes, I mean, I've fostered lots of children, done supportive living, and done the club. We have around about 200 members. We started off with 3 people, and we have 200, 250 members now. And it's grown and grown and is quite relied on by people with learning disabilities and mental health and people with autism.
Mm. There's a lot of people like that on the island, isn't there? You wouldn't think there's, you know, they say that, you know, I mean, probably like 50 years ago, they said, you know, one in every 1,000 people were autistic. Then it's more like every one in 100 nowadays.
Yes.
There's quite a lot on the island, isn't there?
It is. And autistic people find it very difficult to mix and to be able to join in with things, and not by any real experience, but what we do people seem to actually enjoy and help to learn to mix and to, I mean, there's always little problems, but seem to really enjoy going out, mixing with people, learning to be able to communicate, going on holiday. We do nearly anything where leisure's concerned, we're involved with. But we support in lots of other ways as well. We've now got a charity shop that we employ people with learning disabilities and disabilities. We have a young man with autism. We have 2 people with learning disabilities and 1 person with a learning disability and quite severe autism.
There's quite a few, aren't there? I mean, I think you might know my brother's severely autistic. I'm not sure if he did anything with the John's Club, but he lives at Sycamore House at Ride.
Oh, right. Well, it probably does, because Sycamore House does come to the club.
Oh, look at that then, yeah.
So there's so many come on a Friday night. We have between 60 to 70 people now on a Friday night at in one venue, usually at Newport Football Club or Cowes Community Club and sometimes Ride Town Club. We use those three venues and we move it round so people, all sorts of people can come.
Question, and I know you said you fostered a lot of people with autism, but do you have any actual children yourself that are autistic?
Yes, I have. I've got a little boy who has severe autism and other problems, and I've got a young man, Joshua, who also has autism.
Well, it's quite common nowadays.
It is, yes.
I mean, like I said, you know, about 50 years ago, not many people would know about autism. Now it's really much more known, and there's still some people out there today who still don't know about it, but, you know, it's good that, you know, you're doing something like this, you know, not just helping people with autism, but it's also kind of spreading awareness, isn't it?
Well, I think it's spreading awareness, but it's also allowing them to, people with autism, learning difficulties, to mix and to be seen in the community. I think it's really, really important that people with learning difficulties and autism and that are in the community. I mean, we have just one young man who has autism that said before he came to John's club, he just used to sit in his room. Now he does all sorts of things. You know, he used to have an anger problem. He doesn't have that really. Well, he still has a little bit, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was because he's learnt to go out and mix, and he's enjoying life more. Mm. And that's what it's about. It's about enjoying life. And it's not easy because part of our difficulties is relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Because relationships for people with learning difficulties and for people with autism is really, really difficult.
Mm.
I mean, you know, if they have a relationship and they break up, it's not the same as for average people. They take it more personal.
Yeah, I mean, for average people, you know, I've got some friends who aren't autistic who go through breakups, and even they feel, you know, like, the world's going to hell or whatever. But I think for autistic people, you know, they take it a bit more seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a friend who's engaged now, you know, he's very happy, but, you know, before when he was, you know, single, you know, he had a girlfriend and broke up with him, and then he wasn't very happy for quite a while. But actually, he has ADHD, but apart from that, he's quite happy now.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, you've done a whole lot for him, not just with John's Club, but a lot of things, and, you know, we're really grateful for that. And one thing I want to ask him, what would you say to people who actually have to live with autism, or people who actually have to live with people with autism? What would you say to them?
I think for people that actually live with autism, it must be really, really hard. But I would say, try to allow them to have as normal life as possible. Allow them to go out and just remember that we all make mistakes, and I think going out and doing things in life, that is part of normal life, and we have to learn by our mistakes. So though it's hard when you've got a son or daughter that you want to protect, sometimes you have to let them go a little bit to allow them to flourish.
Yeah, even if they are autistic, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm going back to my brother. I mean, about 5 years ago, because he's got severe autism, and, you know, there were times we couldn't let him in the house. He'd just sit on the floor screaming, sitting in front of the screen, and when he didn't have what he wanted, he'd bang his head against the wall. Yeah. He doesn't do that anymore, which is good. But because of his autism, he's never going to have a normal life. But most things we're going to try and do make sure he's happy. And he is, you know, he lives at Ride House. He has activities he does which he loves. He's recently just gone to Disneyland, and he's really happy. And that, you know, obviously I know what you mean. You know, ultimately we want to have these autistic people to have normal lives, or as close to normal as possible. And if they can't, I think, you know, at least they're happy. What would you say in that situation to someone who's got such severe autism they can't have a normal life? What would you think? Just making them happy is enough?
I think making them happy and giving them as normal life as possible. It's got to be in their comfort zone. And anybody that's got a child like that, it is really, really what they must not feel is guilty themselves or looking at residential homes and stuff like that, because it is really difficult for any parent to bring up a severe autistic child, it takes such a lot of work, and that child sometimes needs extra support to be happy.
Mm. I mean, my brother has one or two support workers pretty much every day.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a story. One time, the first time he went at to Ride House, you know, he seemed to be quite happy at the time. And then, you know, they left him for like 5 minutes. They came back, he was gone. He managed a way to unlock the childproof window, escape, and run down to the seafront because that's what he loved.
Yeah, yeah.
Being quite a lot of people for that matter, they want something. You know, they think to themselves, you know, I don't care what everyone says, I want it. I want it. You know, yeah. That's one of the main things that some people, like my brother with severe autism, wants.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. They just get something in their mind and they just do it, don't they? They can't see the dangers and stuff like that.
They just don't understand, do they? No. They don't understand the dangers. They don't understand consequences.
No.
I mean, like I said, I'm also in a bit of a community with autistic people myself. We all hang out. We make videos. We put them up on YouTube. You know, we have a lot of fun with that.
Well, I mean, we also run another organisation. John's Club is part of this, set it up, and that's People First. With Isle of Wight Mencap, we run People First. That is a self-help group. People can come along to, and we talk about what it's like to live in your own home, what it's like to go out somewhere, or we might talk about relationships. We do a bit of campaigning. So we're aiming to do a lot of campaigning with all the cuts that are coming. And we just try to help people make sense of their lives. And we do things for the council, like make things into easy read and lots of different things like that. So John's Club does lots of other things besides just the leisure side of it. And we, as you know, we do holidays. We've done a holiday abroad this year, and that went very well. And we usually take around about 30 people to Butlins every year. But we are aiming to do more abroad holidays because it was very successful, and we aim to do a few more of those.
Okay, last question. Obviously, you know, you talked about, you know, some people have actually gone to live normal lives or as close to normal lives as possible. Does that often happen in John's Club?
Yes, we do. More and more. We're having people who are getting their own flats or living independent and moving from residential homes. But my only worry with that is it's something the council is pushing for people to move into the community. But I am concerned about the support, because support seems to be being cut back, and I think people are being left a little bit vulnerable at the moment with all the cutbacks and stuff like that. And I think that something will happen seriously if cuts are done over and over again. I think, you know, it's getting quite serious now.
It is, I know, yeah. It's all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
After talking about these people's experiences with autism, including my own experiences, I think we have understood the different views of other people with and without needs, and about what they do and why. Thank you for listening.
This is Vectis Radio,
putting the community back into local radio.